All right.
All right, everybody, welcome to a new episode of Indie Film Cafe. I am your co-host tonight, Paul Apersenza, also known as the Moo Cow. How's it going, everybody? And joining us tonight, all the way out from Los Angeles, California, we have...
Jonathan Moody.
Oh.
Wait.
I thought he said Las Vegas.
No, it's Los Angeles, I thought. I don't know.
Nope. And while we're on the subject, joining us also all the way from Las Vegas, we have...
Jonathan Moody. I mean, John Ward.
Yeah, I get you two confused all the time.
It's the power of the Johns.
There you go.
That's
well,
right.
Mr. Ward, this is not your first rodeo here with Indie Film Cafe. Am I correct?
That's correct, but you wouldn't know it from our introduction.
I know. That's okay. We'll get it on down. Well, thank you both for joining us for this episode. And boy, howdy, what a special, special episode do we have for you guys. We are going to be talking about a movie from 1991-ish, a movie called Alien Beasts by the one, the only, Carl J. Sukenick. And wow. What did you guys think about this?
Before then, don't we have to do something else?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was going to just get some general...
let's do the general thoughts after, you know.
All right, so then let's hear some mood music. Okay, so here we are, and I'm going to let you guys give me your first reactions to Alien Beasts.
Well, first, let me, I think that this should be read. So, Alien Beasts, 1991, special CIA agent must deal with humans who mutated into beasts after being exposed to alien radiation and evil terrorists who attacked the CIA base. That never happens in the movie.
Or if it does, I couldn't tell.
That's the synopsis of the film according to IMDb. So just in case for people who don't know this movie, that's what the film is allegedly about.
But what did you think, John? Like, because I just want to preface this by saying we had another guest, unfortunately was not able to make it. And then I literally think, and then we had another guest who said that they couldn't make it. And I am thinking it's literally people just watching the movie and going, nope, sorry, I'm done. I'm on
the curse of Carl J. Sukenick.
and then I asked John and I was like, oh God, he's if he bows out of this movie or doesn't want to do it, and there's gotta be something wrong with it. And there was something wrong with it, but we'll get into that. And you apparently survived it. So thank you, John, for sticking it out and watching it and, you know, actually being able to give us your thoughts. So you had never heard of this movie, nor did I. What was your initial thought?
Well, I do have to say, I have heard of it. I've heard that it's horrible and it's the worst of his movies. But I've never seen any of his movies. Yeah. I've only known him by name. Like he's like, you could write him, like he was living in New York. And if you write him and say, hey, send me a gift, like he'll mail you something back. There was something right. really weird with him.
He used to be able to get his stuff through like fanzine mail orders and stuff like that. The only other time I would ever see anything from him was if you went to a horror convention and somebody happened to have a VHS tape and they're like, oh yeah, I'll sell it to you for $125. I'm like, the hell, man. And then you look at the cover and the cover is just weird because he would end up doing a lot of his own art. And because I guess he has some kind of an artist background. It's just a weird, weird, weird shit and just very, very difficult to get. And if you go on Internet Movie Database, you're only going to see like maybe half of the stuff that he's put out. A lot of that stuff's just not on there and there's just oodles of it. And it's all, you know, shot on video, high 8, super 8, 16 millimeter, camcorder stuff. Wow, just amazing. But
yeah,
what about you, Moody?
Oh, I said I'll just finish. But I did look him up on IMDb. I've only heard of a couple of his movies because SRS Video was releasing them, and that's kind of how I only know who he is. I've heard more things about him than I have seen his movies.
Okay, so Paul wants my initial reaction. So this goes into like the whole thing with with this whole thing is like, I told Paul that I found one of the worst movies I had seen, you know, on Tubi or whatever, Alien Prophecy. And
bad.
And it was terrible, yes. And Paul watched it because he had to put a little a review up there on the site. And so he watched it, thought it was terrible. But he was like, I think I've got an Alien movie that's even worse than that. And I was like, I mean, it's going to be pretty difficult because I rated Alien Prophecy a 10. So it would have to match a 10 in order to, and we'll get into our review later. But what is wrong with people? Why do people feel like they need to be the director of photography, the editor, the visual effects person, the special effects person, the, you know, all these different things? And when just stick to just doing one thing and try to do that well enough. I mean, like his writing.
When you're crazy, person does all of that. A narcissist does
crazy we'll definitely get into because I think that's part of Paul's like background stuff on Carl. It's just nuts. Like, I mean, these people think they're like the only person I can imagine doing that well and has done that well enough is Robert Rodriguez. You know, like he can shoot and edit and everything, and it looks great because he's just well at all of those things. He's like, you know, technically averse, but most of these people are technically efficient, you know.
And you have to understand, it wasn't like I was trying to up you on purpose here. I wanted to do this movie. It's just that, you know, you happen to do Alien Prophecy. And I'm like, well, how cool would it be to do back-to-back Alien movies and just see how it worked? I had no idea what Alien Prophecy, because I'd never heard of it. Mm-hmm. So when I saw it and I was like, wow, this is like half Birdemic, half Neil Breen. This is really bad. How great is it going to be followed up by Carl J. Sukunik? You know,
God, it's completely.
I watched the trailer for Alien Prophecy, and I think that looks a lot more entertaining than this. So it's like, oh man, I almost wish I did that. But it's I don't know. I think that it's comparing this guy, you know, with Robert Rodriguez. Rodriguez is obviously a genius. And because he can do everything and he's, you know, and he's still sane. This is what his brain is. This is what his brain is to us if we wanted to imagine like what being on acid would be. So this is how he sees the world. So he can do everything. And it's almost, and I'm very much into the cosmic horror stuff. This is almost a cosmic horror movie. It makes no sense. It's almost Lovecraftian. It's so bizarre and so strange that I was fascinated.
Watching. It's not so much that the movie is about cosmic horror so much as it is itself a cosmic horror.
Yes. Because it's really weird. I mean, it's one takes and they're long takes. Like that first scene of them fighting, I think was like 7 minutes. There's a scene of the girl undressing where we get nudity that's not even a turn on.
Eight
that was
minutes
15
of that.
Minutes. Somewhere in there. At least it felt like 15 minutes.
I literally thought he did that just so he could touch a girl's boob. Like, well, that's the only reason I thought it was in there.
It was about 8 minutes, and then you end up going back when he was in there, and you're there for another like 4.5 minutes. So it's you know, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, and there is a story. That's the thing, is if you actually, because I've really started paying attention to it. And let's thank the movie gods that he did voiceover, because then you wouldn't understand the movie. But there is a beginning, middle, and end.
Well, John, if you have a really good idea of this, please, if you can possibly sum up this film, I'm going to let you go ahead and do it.
Do it.
Because there's no way that I can. I've seen it a couple times.
Well, it's, I think the IMDb, that description of it is the film, even though he's not showing it. You know, kind of in a way, is the special CIA unit must deal with humans who are mutated into beasts. Okay, so that's who he's fighting at the beginning of the film. So they're fighting the mutants. And then, of course, they've been exposed to the radiation. We saw the guy kind of melting and getting all exposed. And then there's the, like, the nuclear stuff that they're talking about. You know, evil terrorists who attack the base.
From Iran.
From Iran, of course. I guess of the time that it was made. It's kind of all there, but it's only in the voiceover that it's there.
Right.
You know, because he does say, like, countdown to, you know, interdimensional time.
Countdown to energy blast.
Countdown to energy blast. We go into that whole claymation thing, which I thought was
that
great.
Was the best part.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was
psychedelic.
I kind of liked that part. I mean, so real quick, I want to say this. So Paul and I have reviewed many, many, many movies on here so far. I mean, I don't know. We're up to like, what, 50, 60 movies that we've done.
Oh, more than that.
Yeah, more than that. Almost 70, I guess, something like that.
Yeah, we're up to 72 or 73, I think.
Yeah, on the show, on Indie Film Cafe. And the second season, he introduced me to Actium Maximus. The first season, he introduced me to Bard of the Blood Llama. Those two are the films that I have, like, said are, like two of the my least favorite films of, like, his stuff or whatever. I would put this one up there with them. I don't think I'd ever watch it again. I don't think I ever need to watch it again. Unless I have to do it for some kind of Patreon only thing or something, you know, where I have to suffer through it again. But, you know, I honestly, it is so terrible. Like, it's just, it's so bad. It actually makes me miss Neil Breen. Like,
well, it's funny because in case you did want to see it again, I wanted to make sure that you knew that he also released this film in several other edits. One of which is called, Mutant Massacre. And then another one called Mutant Massacre 2. It's the same movie, just redone and reshuffled a little bit. I think he adds a couple of recaps in the Mutant Massacre versions. But otherwise, it's pretty
That's
much
funny.
The same thing again.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
So in case you're looking to have more, Mr. Moody, we can send you more.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I don't know if I want more or not. More, but I did I liked some of his titles for some of his movies. And I'm like, why? Right. He makes some great titles. Like Alien Beasts, I would be interested in watching a movie. You know what I mean? Like that would draw me to it, right? So he has made You guys,
the Toxic Retards.
Oh my god,
there's a title for you.
That's not even like a film, that's like, because there's a bunch of other things that are out there that are basically like 10 minutes of the various films that are just mushed together, sort of like a sampler pack of Carl Sukenik.
The Toxic Retards, there's Space Spawns. The one I liked the
with
best,
Debbie Rochon.
Is a short apparently he made called Ninja Dream. I think that sounds awesome.
Yes, that's the Super 8 short 40-minute one that he did.
Awesome.
Speaking of that, I was never bored by this. It didn't feel like 6 hours like I thought it was going to. It actually went by fairly quickly. And I did check a couple times. I was able to download it from YouTube and watch it on my TV in my living room, which is 55 inches.
Nice.
So I got this on the glorious, you know, 55-inch Samsung.
55 and, inches of Carl J. Sukenik. Wow.
And I was never bored. And I tried looking up on YouTube earlier today, like, is there anything on this movie? Because, like, was there a script? Was there even an outline? Who, you know, how was this thing edited? And how did they know what order to put it into? Because it's like, I did find there are a couple reviews on here for it. And this one guy is like a British guy. He keeps commenting, like, who's the old man that he keeps cutting back to? Why is the old man in all these scenes?
A traitor.
Well, they tell you he's watching the monitor, he's watching the cameras. So he is watching the people.
He's like an omniscient guy.
Yeah. So it's like, it is there. You just kind of have to listen to the narrator repeat things 1,000 times to get it.
We call that breening here at Indie Film Cafe. And I guess technically Carl J. Suchnick did it before, Neil Breen. So maybe
this is a common trope among his films, from what I understand. Repeating things over and over and over. Aliens, he's really, really obsessed over aliens. It's not in this particular film, but for whatever reason, he is completely fascinated with Joe Franklin, who was a TV show talk host in New York City in the 80s. Don't ask me why, but he is. And he pops in on various, just about all his other films. But this, one of the reasons I wanted to do this one is because apparently there are a number of weird bootlegs that are out there. And in fact, Jonathan shared me this thing that David Rock Nelson put out speaking, because apparently they're friends. And he said that, he was complaining that there were people out there who were bootlegging his films and getting money off of it, and he wasn't seeing a dime of it. And there are ones that are out there, but I knew that this one was one of his first films, and I knew that this was himself, and it wasn't like you were getting some other version of Carl J. Suchnick. You were getting it right from the horse's mouth, so to speak, because everything else you have to buy. And it's funny because, like you mentioned, Sub Rosa, SRS Cinema is putting out stuff, but then there's some other ones too. I noticed that there's a place called Six Slice Cinema has put out what's called a limited edition 5-hour VHS tape of 9 of his films. There's supposed to be only 50 copies. Now, whether that was worked out with Carl J. Suchnick or not, I have no idea. And then there was a place called Poser Rot, who did a combo DVD of Lesbian Beasts 5000 AD plus Six Sex Mutant from Space. And that's apparently came from a Betacam version. And that was actually another one that only had a limited release and was sold out. But again, I don't know whether these things were made with his blessing or not, or these are just sort of like rips that people had gotten from things that they either mail ordered or got through conventions, because it is extremely difficult to get your hands on any of this stuff. This is a guy I've been trying to find to get physical copies of for a long time. And the only time you ever see it is, like I said, conventions, or every now and again, you'll see something pop up on eBay, and it, you know, prices are just crazy for eBay. So it's hard. So when I saw this on YouTube, I was like, oh my God, now's our chance to finally do Carl J. Suchnick.
And it's funny that you mention David the Rock Nelson, because I used to be, I'm friends with him on Facebook, but 20 plus years ago, 30 years ago, whatever it was, we were in communication with each other to do a documentary on him. And he did send me a whole bunch of his stuff on VHS.
Nice.
That's awesome.
And all the VHS covers were all hand-drawn. So it'd be like, you know, yes, the mummy versus devil ant. And it would just be him holding the rubber ant, you know, like attacking people. And then he'd be the mummy, but wrapped up in like toilet paper.
That's awesome.
I did think of David while watching this movie.
Sure.
Very David the Rock Nelson.
Well, sure.
It's so funny because Paul had never heard of David the Rock Nelson until December when I was visiting. And I forgot how it happened, but I mentioned David the Rock Nelson being, working on Conrad versus the Werewolf and stuff.
Yeah, that's like what it was. Conrad Brooks.
Yeah. And so I was introducing him to, or telling him about that. And Paul, the stuff I was showing Paul just blew Paul's mind. He was like, this guy, why haven't we done him on our show yet? And we were I'm friends with David as well. Anytime you message David, he writes you a freaking novel when he writes you back. Yeah, it's like it's you'll be like, you could just say, hey David, how are you doing, and he just writes this freaking novel about like and might not even have anything to do with what you're talking about, but he'll write it. And I adore him, and I want to do one of his shows. It's just, you know, one of his movies at some point, probably either this year or next.
Yeah, I'm also Facebook friends with him. And the thing was, remember, we were doing that weird Conrad Brooks film, and David the Rock Nelson shows up and he does his whole weird spiel. I'm like, who the hell is this guy? And
that's it.
Yeah, that's when you introduced me to him. So as soon as I saw him doing his weird spiel, I'm like, man, I got to figure out who this guy was, because he made the whole movie.
He did. It was Transylvania Police.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It was this
cops.
The person who introduced me to David actually was Conrad Brooks, because I was, before the David the Rock thing, is I was putting together a documentary about the fans of Ed Wood. Right. And at the time, almost all the Ed Wood people were still alive. And this was when I was living in Marin County. So I was talking with Paul Marco and Conrad Brooks and Dolores Fuller, who was out in LA at the time, in Vegas at the time.
You met Dolores Fuller?
That's awesome.
No, they spoke to her on the phone.
Oh, well, still, I'm still jealous. Like,
I mean, it's all these, Kathy Wood, I couldn't get old, but I have talked to her lawyer a lot, and that's what kind of ended everything. But when I was talking with
lawyer ended everything.
Yeah, it lawsuits and stuff were brought up. But when I was talking to Conrad, he's like, oh, have you seen, this, like, you know, Conrad Brooks versus the werewolf type thing. And I'm like, no, I haven't. He goes, well, you need to get in contact with David the Rock Nelson. Nice. And that's where I met David from. So,
and that's just fabulous. I just love this continuity from Ed Wood to Conrad Brooks to David the Rock Nelson to Carl J. Sukenick. And that's why, you know, I've been dying to do this whole thing that we do, to bring out all these movies. And then I've been wanting to put this all together on an online web page I wanted to call the Stinkopedia, where you sort of connect all of these people together through their movies to see who was working with who, because they're all dying or they're dead or they're gone, and we don't want them to be forgotten. You know, there's just this wonderful world of weird B movies out there that should not be forgotten. You know?
No, because this is, I mean, it's a, Alien Beast is in a way kind of fascinating, you know, when you really look at it.
Absolutely.
It's an hour and 15 minutes, so it's not just like a 10-minute film or a 40-minute film. This is a movie. You know, this is a legit feature film that somebody sat down and said, I'm going to make this. And he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's worth, you know, reviewing. It's worth talking about.
And it's funny because, you know, I there's an art site that he was part of. It's a Community Art Collective. And, you know, if you want to check out his art, you can go there. And I'm telling you, they're very, very sort of strange scrawls. And I don't really quite get it. But he's on there and he talks about his influences. And it's like, you know, Dario Argento and, you know, kung fu movies and Dracula and Godzilla and classical music and all this other stuff. And I'm like, you know, did you watch an Argento movie? What part of Argento is anything like what you've done here? Because there's nothing. It's like you never saw a movie in your life. It's like you're an alien from another planet who found out that there's something called a movie, and without having any frame of reference, you decided to make one based on what somebody described to you, and you completely got every element wrong.
Well, you know, it's funny because you mentioned before he's like obsessed with aliens and alien things. Maybe there's a thing there, you know, like a connection. Maybe he really is an alien and he's just trying to show us what, you know, like what his home planet actually thinks of us, Earthlings.
Exactly. And,
well,
you know, unlike David the Rock Nelson, who I think has a pretty good idea of where he sits. I mean, he's always, you know, he talks about being, you know, like the worst of the worst movies, blah, blah, blah. Carl J. Sukenick isn't quite like that. He takes his movies seriously, and he expects to be paid, and he expects people to, you know, enjoy his films, and he thinks that they're really, really good, you know, kind of in that sort of Neil Breen sort of way.
I only know one other filmmaker who thinks that way.
we don't have to get into that because I don't want to. I don't want a potential problem.
Oh no, that's all I'm gonna say.
Okay,
so, good. Let's not poke the bear.
But you know, it's to go back to your alien thing is because I was thinking about these type of things. Like, let's say Ringo Starr dies. Paul McCartney is the only one to tell the history of the Beatles, and he can alter it in any way that he wants to, because who's going to question Paul McCartney?
Right.
So what if aliens came down to Earth and Alien Beasts is the only movie they found? This is how they would see our society. They'd be like, oh, look, we found this thing that happens to play in our computer. Let's find out what they were like. And this is what they would see. They wouldn't be seeing Citizen Kane or Jaws or anything. They would be watching this with a 8-minute weird nude woman trying on clothes scene. You know, what would they think?
They would think America, humans are probably worth wiping out.
Yeah,
most likely. Okay. So strange.
Okay, let's get into the characters real quick, okay? Or whatever they are.
Whatever they are.
So all of the characters are named after the actors. You know, yep. The actors have their names in there. Except I looked it up, and the character Henry was actually named Tom Hackney instead of Henry Hackney. So I'm wondering if that was his middle name was Henry or something, or he went by his middle name in the whatever, you know what I mean? But like all of the actors are named, or the other characters are named after the actors. So I'm wondering if, like you said before, John, he might not have a script, you know, together, and he kind of just pulled this together and just did it all by himself.
And the other thing you'll notice too is most of the actors are also doing other things. They're, you know, either camera operators or they're production assistants. They're doing other stuff. So it's not like he's going out and getting professional actors to do any of this stuff. He's pretty much utilizing friends, family, and other people who happen to be right there. Who are there, and it's like, hey, you go be this character, you go be the guy. You know, I need somebody to sort of be the kung fu thing, so you go and do that. And we're gonna set up the camera, you know, 40 feet away, and just it's gonna watch you guys do that. And you know, this way you don't have to run the camera, you can actually be in the film. Woohoo!
Well, that's what it really seems like with the opening, with the, you know, like the 10-minute fight scene is they set the camera up across the street, somebody hit record, and then just ran in front of the camera and then started fighting people. And they just let it play out. Like, we don't need close-ups, we don't need cutaways, we don't need anything.
We don't need to distinguish who any of these goddamn people are.
Yeah. That I mean, that bothered me in the first 10 minutes because I'm just like, the hell is going on? Like, it feels like we kind of stumbled onto somebody's home videotape. And because, like, I literally did stuff like that when I was a kid. I had a video camera that my parents gave me, right? And I put it up in my window of my house, right? And then I put it down so you could see outside, because I wasn't smart enough to go, oh, I need a, you know, I could use a big, like, you know, extension cord or something, right? So I just put it up, you know, outside my house, and I have people outside playing and fighting and doing whatever just for fun, you know. And that was like a freaking a home video, right? That's what that felt like. It felt like somebody just hit record and said, "You guys fight," and or whatever, and then, you know, they recorded this stupid fight scene that
it's
really did
like
not
a
make
homemade amateur film like Kenneth Anger or some of the other early things. It's just really, really weird.
It was weird and had no point to the rest of the movie as far as I was concerned. You know, like, I couldn't understand why. Okay, you know.
But it's like when so at least we know at the beginning it's a fight scene. So they're fighting, and then at some point he cuts it. You have something like the woman who gets naked, where it takes her, like, what does she do? Like, okay, we know she's putting on some sort of suit, like the camouflage suit, but why is it so long? Why, what is she doing? Like, why can't she just go in take her clothes off, put on the suit, put on the hat, and then leave, because then the guy comes in and threatens her or tries to kill her or something, and then she takes the suit off again.
I'm sure the direction was just try shit on.
Yeah. And my other thing is, if she didn't do that, they'd have to add more scenes, because it was only an hour 15 minutes to begin with. So they would have had to have add more stuff. So padding, I think, you know, no pun intended with padding with clothes, but padding, you know, I think is the big thing.
Here's the other thing. Who was that person? I don't know who anybody is other than, okay, the Sarah, whatever her name is, but she dies. She gets killed. After that, I have no idea. There's that old guy who's the traitor. There is some kind of weird, bald, pink flesh burn guy who wanders around holding his stomach that leaks stuff everywhere. And let's not forget, there's a lot of weird gore, weird homemade gore that is in here too. And apparently, Sukunik loves to have all of this. There's lots of weird gore. So if you're a gore fan, you'll like Carl J. Sukunik's movies. Carl himself shows up. He's in there. He's saying all kinds of weird shit. And you're right, John. The narration is frequently the only thing that gives you any kind of information about what's going on. But the bad part about that is that the narration is horrible. I mean, he doesn't.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
He can't deliver a line to save his life. My God.
Well, and I'm thinking the repeating is possibly that it's urgent. So you should be like, what do you mean? What do you mean? No, what do you mean? You know, type of thing. Instead, it's, what do you mean? What do you mean? What do you mean? And it's like, wait, is there something wrong? Is something stuck? Because he's not giving any sort of urgency to what he's saying. He's not giving you anything except that it's, so I don't mind it when he's going like, you know, somebody has broken in. So it's almost like an alarm that it's repeating. That I get. But when it's information, like, why are you repeating yourself over and over and over? And let's not forget, a lot of that voiceover work are done to still.
Right.
You got those two people in the cafe or whatever it is. And that was another thing is, until he starts speaking, is I thought something was frozen. Like, I actually hit my remote, and then he starts the narration, and then I'm like, oh, okay. It's like a picture.
Right.
Well, you might find this interesting, John, but apparently Debbie Rochon worked with him on one or two of his films, at least she's mentioned in there. She may be one of those situations where he shot her and then reused that footage in four or five other movies. But the story that I remember reading was that, you know, sometime in the late 80s, early 90s, she got hired to be in this film. And apparently his mother is the one who ends up bankrolling most of these films. And she lived not too far away in New York City and actually walked down the street to Debbie Rochon's apartment and paid her whatever she was supposed to be worth there. And I am dying. First, I'm dying to talk to Debbie Rochon anyway. I think she's wonderful. But how awesome would it be to get her on the Indie Film Cafe Spotlight? And I would love to ask her, what was it like to work with Carl J. Sukunik?
Oh, my goodness. I want to know that, too. And, Paul, thank you for bringing that up, because now I'm going to be on a quest to get Debbie on our show.
Yes.
Because I didn't even think about that, but I am friends with her, so I could just ask at some point.
I can only imagine she gets a knock on her door and who's there? Oh, it's Carl's mom. I have money for you.
Carl's mom.
Yeah.
I mean,
and, you know, if you look at a lot of these release dates, you know, Space Psychos, Toxic Retard, Zombie City, you know, Tales of the Screaming Madness, Psycho Space Demons, a lot of these things were actually shot in the late 80s and early 90s and were not released until much later. There's a whole thing going on about who's releasing these movies, how they're being released, because like I said, for a long time, the only way you could get them was on VHS tapes that are long, long since out of print. And I just don't know where they're coming from. And
he, you know, the man himself has talked about how he's, you know, doesn't really know who's doing it, or, you know, there's a question about who's getting the money. The Sub Rosa guy put out an article in there where he talked about he actually went to the assisted facility where Carl Sukunet is currently living, because after his mom died, he went into some kind of assisted facility because apparently he's just not entirely right in his mind. And believe it or not.
And, yeah, you would never know it from the film.
They worked out some kind of a deal for these releases, but, you know, I don't know. And supposedly he got paid, but you never know. I mean, if we're getting information from only one side, I don't know what Carl Sukunik's side is and if we could even trust it, you know? And then there are those who will look at that and say, well, why are you covering the film from somebody who isn't in their proper mind? And I'm thinking, well, he wants this movie to be out there. He has fans, he has people that he wants to show these to. He wants to be a filmmaker, so he puts it out there. So it's perfectly legit to do that. And then the other thing I wanted to say is, you know, there's a lot of people that said that Stanley Kubrick was insane. You know, he made Shelley Duvall do 128 takes in The Shining of that scene on the staircase. And a lot of people are going to say that was nuts. But a lot of people will confuse genius with nuts. It's not necessarily the same thing, because you can be a genius and make great films, but you could be, you know, a genius and make terrible films. You could be a crazy person and make great films. You could be a crazy person and make terrible films. And this is a case, I think, where he might be a crazy person, but he's also making terrible films. At least this one.
I was hoping you weren't going in the route of calling him a genius, because
No. I mean, I'm sure there are some SOV fans who think so, but
yeah, I don't think that there's any genius here. I mean, it's just one of these things where I really think this is drugs. I think that, you know, I'm sorry, allegedly drugs. Yeah. And there is, because who would make this type of thing unless you, I mean, this is like something Dennis Hopper would make. I mean, it's just really bizarre type of filmmaking. I mean, just, it doesn't make sense. I mean, like right now I have it playing, and it's the scene where the guy with the beard is on the sofa smoking the cigarette, yelling about the purple coat? Like, he keeps saying the purple coat, and the camera never moves. He's just yelling at people off screen. And oh, wait, it just went to a long shot. So we do have two angles now. So it's, I mean, no, I don't, I think this is, it's got to be something like there's something psychologically wrong, maybe, or drug induced, or because this is an Ed Wood, you know, Ed Wood knew what he was doing. He just had no budget to work with.
Exactly. Right. Like I always get mad when people call like Play 9 from Outer Space like the worst film of whatever. Like, because I mean, obviously we found some that are way worse. But what I'm saying is, like, Ed Wood, I agree with you, John. Ed Wood at least knew what he was doing when it came to things. Like, he knew where to put the camera, he knew how to, you know, like, he may not have had the best cast members because he had what he could afford, you know, and stuff,
right?
And you know, you get what you pay for, pretty much. But this guy, I just don't think he knew anything of what he was doing. Well, was Alien Beast his first movie, Paul?
Yeah, from what I gather it is. But I'll tell you, the weird thing about it is that he does have some kind of artistic sensibilities to him. He may not have any idea how to make an actual narrative that's captured on a film, and he has like no clue whatsoever. However, that last 10-minute weird psychedelic claymation thing,
love that stuff.
That's the thing he seemed to understand. It was weird and crazy and strange, but it worked. You know,
are
what
you
mean?
Saying he should have made a claymation movie, like a whole claymation movie? Like, yes. That would have been awesome. I mean, I would have watched that. I did like the claymation. I thought it was pretty.
I would at least watch like a short of that. Maybe do like a weird kind of like 20-minute thing, because it's, you know, while I was looking for stuff on YouTube, is somebody did, they clipped out just that portion and put it up on YouTube. And I watched it again, and it's like, this is really trippy. You know, it's like, I'm actually enjoying this. It's so weird that I like it.
Right. And the thing is, he's not, you know, confined to telling a standard story in a standard way. He's not worrying about directing actors. He's not after worrying about anything but coming in between his actual vision and what he's doing. He has complete control. And as I'm sure you both gentlemen understand, it is not an easy thing to sit there and do a claymation movie, especially for like 10 minutes and all that weird shit that's going on. That is difficult work to do and exacting work to do. And he clearly has that part down. It's just everything else, you know, from the music to lighting to setting up a camera, all the basics, he has no clue.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed the music. I want the score to this. I would love to listen to this score. I mean, I really liked it. And because I thought that it actually made the film even trippier. And I just saw something here. So there's two people right now and they're fighting in a yard. And so obviously he knows a little bit about what he's doing because the camera's like on the other side of the street, like he normally does. They fight for a little bit, a couple of minutes of them fighting. It cuts to the old guy in the room, and then it cuts to a medium shot. Then he does the medium shot for a little bit, cuts back to the guy in the room, and then it goes back to the like the other side of the street. So he gets that you can't just go from long shot to medium shot because of the continuity. You have to cut to something else and right. then go to the medium shot. So he obviously understands something about filmmaking, because not once in this did I go, well, that doesn't match, the continuity is totally off. So he obviously right. knows to cut to something or go do something,
but because he's only got the one camera, he's not cutting to any kind of close-ups on any of the characters who are actually doing things. I mean, he's probably, and he's a big fan of kung fu movies, he's probably sat there and watched all the same Shaw Brother movies that all of us have seen. He just, this is his way of trying to add that in there. And he does get like, there's like, you know, throwing stars that are in there and just all kinds of weird ninja tropes and stuff. And I think there's like a G.I. Joe in there a couple of times that in the claymation thing and, you know, with the kung fu grip and that whole bit. It's just very, very strange and trippy. So like, it's like he can't do it on a normal cinematic way, but he can do it with clay or whatever the other shit that he's doing there. Like I said, that seemed to work. It's just the rest of it is some of the worst stuff I have ever seen in a film. Just really, really bad, just poorly done. So I'm wondering, I mean, he didn't really have anybody there to tell him, hey, you should probably do it this way, or, you know, let's not shoot just your homemade couch and that's it.
And this goes to what we were talking about earlier of him doing everything. If he had a DP there, his DP would probably tell him what to do, right? You know, as far as the look and the whatever, all that stuff. But also editing. I think he was his own editor. And the editing is atrocious in this film. It is just a fuck up. It's a clusterfuck of like images at times, and like in some of it's that trippy, like, you know, like we're gonna do this, we're gonna shoot this, we're gonna, you know, right? But then some of it's like that, and I feel like it wasn't meant like that. I feel like some of it was just accidental, like leftover footage or something, like, or whatever, like cut, you know, like not cut right or something.
And there's a lot of shots that sort of go back from into the negative, backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards, and sort of like over and over and over again. And it's, you know, you do,
well,
it
that's what I'm talking
it's...
about with almost the cosmic horror stuff is that he kept going to like negative photography and excuse me, the music kind of has that weird psychedelic type of thing to it. And so there's a lot of that weird stuff that almost makes this kind of like a cosmic horror film. But
and it's a good thing, because this would be one of the most boring things I'd ever seen if it weren't for the fact that every 5 seconds I'm going, what the fuck am I watching?
Right. You
know? Yeah. No, it's
His
editing is just atrocious at times. The camera work is, I mean, I mean, I'm like, at least I saw things, you know, like at least things were framed. I mean, that's all I can give him credit for director of photography. I mean, there's no really cool shots or anything.
I was expecting the camera to fall off the tripod a few times. I mean, you know,
probably did.
What Jonathan said should be on the DVD box if it ever comes out, you know, in quotes, you know, at least I saw things. Jonathan Moody.
That's right.
I would love that. Let's talk to Ron Bonk at SRS Cinema if they put a Blu-ray out.
We saw things. We were able to see things. Hey, we've seen movies where we can't even do that.
I know. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm pretty impressed at that, you know, at least.
Well, and when you look at this, speaking of that, is because, like I said, I have a plane right here. You can see everything. Now, granted, this is probably shot, what, maybe on VHS or something. And yeah, it looks like crap because of the transfer and it's, you know, whatever. It's just, you know, maybe a dupe of a dupe or whatever. But everything, it looks like it's in focus. You know, the whatever sound is there is clear. Mm-hmm. So you're not like sitting in the dark. You know, he's not like shooting at night and you can't see anything. You know, it's, and I think that's one of the reasons why I could watch it, was it's like, okay, I don't understand what's going on, but at least I know that's a fight.
Right. And that's the part of the problem too, though, is that you can see it and kind of sort of understand it, but it doesn't help. It doesn't help as far as the story goes.
It goes, you know, back to Alien Prophecy, which you still need to see, John, but Alien Prophecy, you could see everything. It was clear. There was great sound, all the stuff, but the story made no fucking sense. And when the story makes no sense to a movie, I can't like it, you know, because I'm a writer first, like director and producer next, you know. I look at everything in the terms of like, I see, if I can see a story, you know, I get excited. You know what I mean? Like, if there's a story there, like, I'm excited about watching the whole thing. If there's a script there, I have a, you know, we've talked about this, John, too. And Paul knows Robert Elkins. Robert Elkins can make movies for no budget with, you know, with his friends in his backyard. You know what I mean? And with no script, all that stuff. And it totally makes sense. Like, you can follow along with it. It might be silly and whatever and goofy at times. Like, Zombie Croc was completely just really silly and fun. But then, you know, this is beyond that. You know?
It doesn't wobble off into some other dimension where you have no idea what's going on.
Exactly. You know,
like this one does. However, I will say he does clarify at the end when you finally get through that weird psychedelic claymation thing where he says, "Carl, you've defeated the enemy agents. You won."
and then it ends.
Yes.
That feels like, you know what that felt like? Have you ever played those video games? Like those Nintendo games, or at the end of the Nintendo game, it goes, "You have just defeated blah, 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 blah. You win." You know, and then it just ends and does the music and everything.
It says, "The end." You know, that's it. It's done.
That's it. Yeah. That's what it is. Like, I think this dude played too many Nintendo games and thought, you know what? I can make a movie, you know, like this, you know, kind of. I mean, I don't know. Maybe. That's a little psychedelic.
Yeah. And to go back to something that you said, Jonathan, is I have to agree with you, is that writing is key. And the film that I always use as an example to that is Clerks. And Kevin Smith has even admitted to this, that if it wasn't for the script, the movie would be horrible. And it's poorly shot. It's you can see grain all over the place on it because, you know, it's shot on film. And then, of course, they had to up, you know, the up like the brightness on it and everything. That it's not well directed. It's not really well acted or anything. It would if he was not such a good writer, it would not be a good movie.
Well, I tell you what, John, all of those things that you just mentioned have been completely redefined by the movies that we watch here. So when I see a movie like Alien Beast, the concept of poorly written is completely redefined.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even the same ballpark. It's, you know, not even the same game. You know, really, like,
and yet it captures your attention because it is so strange. It's like, I have never seen anything quite like this.
Well, you know? I mean, it goes back to me saying I have Neil Breen.
Yeah,
but at least to me, Neil Breen's movies are more entertaining.
Because, this is true.
You know, because at least with him, like, it's following him. He's terrible acting, terrible writing, terrible everything. He at least has some sort of script in mind, you know, whether or not that's exactly what happens. And then, you know, it's just like, what the fuck is going on? But it's inside his mind, right? Mm-hmm. And this movie is inside this guy's mind with no script. It's just like, he's just like, go do this. And let's see this happen.
Well, the other common denominator that I find with Neil Breen and some of the other ones is that, you know, the enjoyment I get isn't so much me watching it, but watching other people watch it and experiencing it and seeing how they react to it, because I know they have never seen anything like this. And, you know, you got to see, you know, it's not a surprise that this has never been released by anybody, that the only way you could get this film was by mail order directly from Sukunik himself, because who the hell's going to put this out? Troma wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole, with a 100-foot pole.
That's sad. They'll touch Actium Maximus, but they wouldn't touch this movie.
But now, after all this time, you know, when Sukunik, you know, I guess because you couldn't get anything, now people are coming back and you know, like SRS and others are trying to release some of this stuff, which is great. You know, what is it? Space Psychos is going to be coming out in Blu-ray. I can't wait to get that. I'm dying to see how bad this possibly could get worse or better. You know, who the hell knows? But it's going to be in Blu-ray and I can't wait to see it.
The last thing I want to share before we go into the review itself is everybody in the cast. I'm on the IMDb. Everybody in the cast were camera operators.
Yes, yes.
Oh my God.
Utilized people who were there.
Yeah. You know, you're just like, okay, you hold the camera while I go do this, you know? So like,
the girl who plays Sarah, she's got such a New York accent. You know, it's just clearly somebody from next door.
Yeah.
Well, and to go back to your release thing for a second, is this is the only way I would watch his stuff, is some people just need to have a collection. Like Neil Breen, I have really no desire to sit down and just watch one movie and then 6 months later watch another film. If there's a collection, I would probably pick it up just to have it. And the same thing with his films is if there were Alien Beasts and a collection of all of his movies, you know, where you could buy like a 6-set volume, I would pick those up just to have them.
You know, John, he's out there in Vegas with you. Yeah, you could go and meet him any day.
Hey, look, Neil Breen does have a collection. However, it's just way
I've seen one. Yeah.
It's expensive.
Yeah, I have seen a couple out there. So yeah, Neil is out here. I know a few people who have worked with him and
hey, you could work with him if you wanted.
I thought of reaching out to him.
Dude, if you set up a lunch meet with Neil Breen, I will fly out to Vegas and meet with you guys. How awesome would that be? And I hate flying. I would do it for that.
Yep.
I have heard with him is he's not easy to film with, because what he does is you'll get a phone call at like 5 a.m. and it's like, we're filming today. Be out by the Big Rock. And then you go out and film. That there isn't really he's one of those guys that it's just like, I have to film when I need, you know, when I'm in the mood to film. So there isn't set schedule. But you know, of course, I've never worked on one of his films, so I'm kind of
by the
it.
Big Rock.
Yeah, you know, that it's just not. That's yeah, just so that's why awesome. He doesn't get a lot of people out here to work with him, is that it's just he's not, you know, there's no schedule.
Well, I think this is the perfect time to go into our review part of the thing, which I can't believe. I mean, I was thinking when I was watching this that we were not going to be able to talk for an hour about this movie. Yep, we were able to gab for an hour.
Yeah, we could talk for 2 hours about this film.
We could.
We haven't really, really scratched the surface about what's going on in this film, but that's okay. There's you have to see it, and it's out there on YouTube. Do yourselves a favor and check it out, because there's nothing else like it.
We'll post the link down here and everything and on the website. So you can check it out on YouTube, and please, please do. Like, we're not saying these things. We want people to watch these movies.
Yes.
You know? We hardly ever do a movie that we actually don't want somebody to suffer through. So There you go.
Right. And boy, howdy, is this an independent film. This is about as independent as you can get.
All right. So do you want to explain the review part?
Okay. So we have a review system by which the three folks who watch the movie is going to award points 1 to 10, by which the lowest score, like a 1 or 2, is reserved for the really, really good films because there's not very much stink involved, all the way up to 8, 9, and 10 for those movies that are really, really, really stinky. And then once at the end, you can like kind of like go a half point if you feel very subtle about it, 5.5 or 6.5. And then at the end, we total up those scores and then we try to figure out what the stinkiest movie was of the season. And this has been an interesting one so far for season 4, because we kind of started off a little on the low side. And boy, howdy, did we jump into the deep end with some deep crap.
Yeah, this month has been pretty bad.
Yeah, February has been a rough month for stinky films. But, you know, just when you thought Alien Prophecy was bad, and boy, was it bad. Firstly, this one, I think, tops it. But I'm going to let you guys go ahead and do your own review.
Yeah, John, you go first, since you're the... You're the special guest of the evening.
Okay. Now, am I just giving the number or am I giving my reasons for the number?
You can give your reasons, yeah, as well as the number.
Okay. I'm actually going to go in the middle. I'm going to say 5.
What?
Wow.
Yeah, holy cow.
Yeah, because I was fascinated by it. I thought I was going to hate it. I've only heard bad things about it. And it didn't feel, like I said, it didn't feel like 6 hours. It actually felt like a regular running time. I was kind of looking stuff up to see, you know, what I could find about the movie while I was watching it. And I actually thought about it when the film was over, you know, when I was kind of like getting ready for bed, brushing my teeth and stuff. I was kind of thinking about, you know, like, well, how was this edited and who edited this and why? And why was this movie even made? And, you know, was he on drugs while doing it, or is this just his normal state? And I actually was asking myself a lot of questions that you would probably, you know, maybe put towards a more kind of political or some sort of mystery or something like that out there. And I don't know, I found it really kind of entertaining. I wasn't annoyed by it or anything. I found it. So I don't think it's like a, would I recommend this to somebody? No, that would probably be a 1. And it's definitely not a 10. Right, no. Yeah, 1 is good. So I don't think I'd recommend it, but I don't think it's dreadful. So it's not a 10 for myself. I would never recommend this to anybody. But for myself, I found it a 5. I found it very interesting because I would love to be able to talk to somebody about this movie.
Wow, it's almost like you're saying that it was so bad, it goes all the way around to good.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It does. Because right now on the screen, I'm getting all the stuff that's like the negatives and that purple guy's melting. And it's just like, this is really cool stuff. I mean, I would love to have this in like one of my films playing on a TV. You know, somebody's watching something weird and all this weird stuff is up on the screen. Okay. So yeah. I think that's a good way to describe it, is that it kind of goes all the way around to 5.
Okay. So who wants to go next?
I'll go next. I'm sorry, man, but I still have to give this a 10. Like, this is when I watch this movie, I can't look past the fact that obviously there was no script. There was a bunch of friends just getting together and making a movie. Now, normally I'd be like, that's great. But when it makes absolutely no sense and it's just pure crap to me, I can't justify it and give it anything. I can't give it anything lower than a 10. It's terrible to me. But I get what you're saying, John. And if that's the thing with this show, is like what I like about getting people on the show, like Alien Prophecy, I also said a 10. And what is it? And I had two people give it a 9 and 9.5, you know, and I was shocked, you know, and I'm sort of shocked you gave it a 5. But like, I get it. Like, and I get what they were saying, too, for their why they actually couldn't give it a 10, you know, or whatever. Couldn't give it.
I gave it a 9.5 myself, frankly.
The 5 is only for me. That's it. Okay. I would say this was a 10 for anybody else, but it's only for me.
Okay, what did you say, Paul? Did you give this a 9.5 or 10?
No, I was giving a 9.5 to Alien Prophecy.
Okay, so what do you give? this one?
Well, I'm kind of there with John in that I understand that. I mean, it completely makes sense to me that it's so bad that it goes all the way around to good. However, while it sits there at good for about 10 minutes, it goes back all the way around to horrible again for me. So to me, this is almost a defining 10. Like if you can't really get much worse, at least as far as the basic stuff. And my fascination with it that I share with you is for the wrong reasons. You know, it's not for the reasons that I would enjoy a film. It's for the reasons why, you know, the way it just causes torment for just most other people and just how badly and poorly it's done. Although it is extremely entertaining.
Has Gary watched this one yet?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
What, like, does he think it's a 10? Like, would this be something he would
well, it's funny you mentioned that, because we did a Patreon only review that we are going to be releasing, so that will be on our Patreon page, and you can hear what Gary has to say and what I have to say. So yeah, there you go. All you folks out there who would like to join our Patreon get to hear more people talk about Carl J. Sukenick's Alien Beasts. Come check it out. Give it, you know, $1.
$1. Come on. And that'll next month anyway. That'll be March. Next month. So sounds yeah. Right. So we're releasing this month, you know, in a couple days actually, you know, and then you guys can hear our things. And then you can hear the following, you know, next month, you can hear Paul and Gary talk about it as well. So
and Gary has a lot of things to say, I can tell you that.
Well, good. I double the review of Alien Prof, or not Alien, Jesus, Alien Beasts.
Because I've been tormenting poor Gary for a good 20 years now, and so he's seen a lot of my films, and even he had to say he'd never seen anything quite like this before.
Yeah, definitely. It was and he suffered through Quest for the Egg Salad with us. So
yes,
yes,
he did. But, so there you go. 10, 10, and 5. So a 25. I'm surprised that it was this low, but I understand. I understand.
No, she gets your point, John, which I totally get it too.
Yeah, because I'm right now, what's playing on screen is all that claymation stuff. And if you actually watch it, it's just like somebody had to think of this. He had to write this down to say, There's like this alien or reptile hand, and he cuts off the fingers with a hatchet, and it bleeds everywhere. And then there's another thing where there's like almost like a clay head, that kind of like a Gumby head, and he's stabbing the eyes out from it. And it's just like, this is all stuff that he had to think about. You know, mm-hmm. He had to sit there and say, we need this reptile hand, and we need to cut it up with a hatchet. So that's why
we need to show you 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, I mean, there's something in there that I'm finding fascinating.
He is really hooked on repetition. You know, the same images, the same, you know, sentences, the same words, the same music. There's so much of the same thing going on and on and on and on. And to me, that's another thing that sort of sticks pins under my thumbnails. Like, you know, repetition really kind of drives me crazy. So while I did get all the enjoyment part and all the fascination part, some of the other parts in there, they're just very, very torturous to some of my stuff.
Well, with that being said, we here at Indie Film Cafe are very happy that, thank you, John.
Thank you so much for last minute coming out and jumping into Alien Beasts.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, thank you for having me. This was
fun. Definitely. What have you been up to lately?
Of course, hawking Axemus 1 and 2 and getting prepared to shoot Axemus 3 and 4. Hopefully, fingers crossed, I'll shoot a short film called Delete by the end of the month. Getting the cosmic horror film going, which is called Reign of Vibrant Screams.
Ooh.
And and just kind of getting future projects going now that everybody seems to be getting back into shooting again.
Well, I have to ask you, will you be taking anything that you've seen from Carl J. Sukenick and kind of transferring it into some of your own films from here on out?
It's a possibility, but it depends on what it is. But as a joke, I mean, I would love to be able to get permission to use that that clay footage, just that whole weird montage, just on a TV screen or something. I don't know if this stuff is public domain or if he owns it or what, but I would
nobody knows.
That.
Even Carl might not even know because he's like wondering why his shit's being bootlegged.
Yeah, the SRS people might know if you could maybe talk to them about it, but I'm not even sure they know.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd ask Ron Bonk, you know, about that or whatever, but I don't know. That's really good. And John's going to be, has been joining us for a lot of our video stuff. He's been on the Man Eaters series that we just kicked off. He was in, he's been doing Quick Review Thursday with us. So, and I think there's probably more, and I know he's going to do another Indie Film Cafe with me and Cameron Scott coming up. So that's going to be fun. So we got, you know, we got you booked for a lot of stuff here at Indie Film Cafe, and we're very happy to have you, dude, because
Thank you. I'm happy to be on.
Yeah, you always bring something new and exciting to what we're talking about. Well,
although I doubt any of those other things are going to be anything quite like Alien Beasts.
Probably not. They might be I know the next one will be a lot more fun, and John knows which one that is, you know. So we'll talk more about that on the next episode. But Paul and I are gearing up. We got two short films that we're shooting back and back to back, and Paul just got done like set designing, so setting that up with our assistant director Joe / line producer. Joe's been doing a lot of work for us, and we really appreciate him, and we haven't had him back on Indie Film Cafe in a while. We gotta get him back.
He's been busy,
so we really appreciate that he took the time out of his schedule to work on that. And we're gonna be busy March 12th to the 14th. I think the 14th. So wait, 15th. So we're going to be busy. So we got so much stuff to get done, and we're excited. We can't wait for you all to see what Sick Flick Productions is up to next. And we've got Indie Film Cafe. We've still got Sexploitation Sleaze Cast, which Paul is doing. We've got, he does that with Rebecca Reinhart. So God bless her soul.
And if you get a chance, John, you should check that out. It's actually so much fun. And we get to dig up a lot of other wackadoodle movies that are out there with
a lot
more boobage involved.
Yeah. I mean, this had some boobage, which I was, you know, meaningless boobage, which, you know, like, whatever.
Always the best kind.
You guys inspired me to do that one filmmaker, one film. So because of all the work that you do on you know, on your own, you know, on Indie Film Cafe.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that. And did you get to hear? We did get to interview Joe Estevez, which was a big score for us. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I wish the stuff didn't fuck up, but I think it didn't. It still worked out good. Like you know, we had a little malfunction, which thankfully today, I mean, other than maybe a couple, couple mess ups with the audio here, it wasn't that bad today. So I was really happy about that.
Thought I heard Dogzilla in the background, though.
Yeah, there's a couple dog issues, you know, going on. But that's what happens when you live with dogs, you know, and you're doing things through Zoom. They don't understand. Hey, I'm doing a podcast here. Shut up.
Right.
You know, you know, but anyway, next week, John, Cameron, and I are doing a podcast, and I might be doing it in San Diego, California. Because I've got to go down and help out. I'm doing another podcast that I can't talk about right now, but I can say that I'm doing it with Jenny Spain of Dead Girl status. So she's allowed me. I asked her if it was okay if I did a podcast at her house, you know, when we're doing things, and she's like, sure, she doesn't care. So, so she might pop up and say hello. Who knows?
Well, that's cool.
So I really appreciate everybody checking this out. If you guys need to check anything out here, we've got indiefilmcafe.reviews, which is Paul's website for us. We just launched sickflickproductions.com. So we've got that going on, which I'm really excited about. There's a lot of really cool content there. And obviously the Podbean section, and you can find us on iTunes and or Apple Podcasts as well. Also, once again, to bring back patreon.com/indiefilmcafe just to support us for $1 a month. I mean, I give $1 a month to a bunch of other podcasts, not just because I want you guys to do it, but because I love supporting my friends and fellow podcasters and stuff,
right?
You know, and so please just $1 a month usually won't break the bank. I mean, unless you do like 100 of them, you know, then maybe that might be a little bit of a problem. But, you know, if you guys can just give $1, even that will get you a Patreon only audio, and you get to download it. You can actually download it, the audio, so you can have it forever. You won't be streaming it. So,
and I think our Patreon folks actually get a sneak preview of everything before everybody else does, don't they?
Not yet, but they will soon enough. Good. I've got to work on that. I'm very bad with keeping up with Patreon and everything. But since we got everything on schedules and stuff, I can actually do that. So I'm gonna probably.
Okay. Well, and I'm gonna throw this out there. This is not the last Carl J. Sukenick movie that's gonna appear on Indie Film Cafe.
Bet
your bottom dollar there's gonna be more
this season. It will be, but there will be more seasons. We've got a plethora of seasons probably, and we've got so much so many movies we haven't done yet. It's not even funny. So
Trust me, if there was any justice in the universe, I'd be doing this full time, and we'd be doing this at least weekly, if not more.
Oh, definitely. Well, thank you. And once again, thank you, John. Thank you, Paul, for this amazing movie. And everybody go check it out. Please watch it on YouTube. Or if you have a VHS copy of it, watch it on there. Check it out. And please come support all our stuff. So thank you guys for checking us out. And you want
to
check us out?
Countdown to Energy Blast.
Hi, guys.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye. Actually, wait. I'm sorry. I'm going to turn off the AC. I'm at work. So just in case it's hard to hear.
This will be good outtakes.
Right. Okay, it should turn off in a moment, but just in case. I don't want it to sound like a storm in here.